Are you someone who loves Christmas to the point that you really hate to take the decorations down, even if it's now January 15th? If you answered yes, you are a Noelophile. And so am I, and this show is for you.
Hi, I'm Dot Cannon, also known as Noella Noelophile.
And welcome to my Noelophile podcast. On this show, we're going to be talking about Christmas in general and California Christmas in particular.
The glass is held in the crucible at 2100 degrees. It's a really strange material because you can start to feel the glass solidify as you're working it.
Starting off our 2022 Christmas season shows, we're going to be visiting with some California-based artists whose work you might like to consider as you look for unique gifts for friends and family. The first of these is Maria Inamoto, a gifted glass artist based in San Francisco. Maria crafts incredibly beautiful hand-blown glass items, including unique lidded containers, gracefully shaped glasses, and bowls with jewel-like swirls of color. Maria, how did you first come to choose glass as the artistic medium which you wanted to work?
Well, I went to art school. I went to the Rhode Island School of Design, and I was originally interested in becoming a painter, which I think still deep in my heart, I still want to pursue that at some point in my life. That's what I did growing up. And then I don't know where the idea came about, but I just had heard about glass, that there's a glass department. And so I had talked to a girl that was at the time majoring in glass, and it sounded really interesting. And so when it came down to choosing my major sophomore year, I just kind of jumped into it. I didn't know anything about glass. I didn't know anything about really the processes that are involved in working with glass at all. But conceptually, I figured it was a material that had a lot of possibilities, and that really interested me. And so I kind of blindly decided that that's what I wanted to do, and I stuck with it the whole time. The first time I gathered glass out of a furnace, I was pretty hooked. You know, I would have never imagined that I would be sitting here today doing an interview about glass blowing, but I've been doing it for 12 years now. And yeah, that's kind of where it started, just kind of blindly jumping in.
When you talk about the processes involved in glass blowing and crafting with glass, I'm completely unfamiliar with those. What is one thing that you would teach somebody about glass blowing that you learned as you began?
Well, to someone that doesn't know anything about glass blowing, so glass has to be created at a certain temperature. And so all of the raw materials that are involved to make glass, you know, essentially quartz with other added materials that make it workable, because if you were to heat just quartz straight, you'd have to heat it to 3000 degrees and it'd be really stiff. So you have to bring it down to about 2000 degrees, 2100 degrees exactly, is the temperature that the glass is held at in the furnace. And it's essentially a glass furnace is a heated chamber. It can be gas, it can be electric, but there's a crucible inside, and that can range in different sizes. The furnace that the studio that I work at has, that's a 600-pound glass furnace. And so that means the crucible can hold 600 pounds of molten glass at once. And so the glass is held in the crucible at 2100 degrees. And you essentially just take a rod, which is called a pipe. It's a rod with a hole running through it. And you would spool that molten glass on the end of the pipe, and you would gather glass out of it. And at 2100 degrees, the glass is glowing orange. When you hit the surface of the glass, you can't feel it at all. And it has the consistency of honey. It kind of has that glow of orange as well. And so as it cools, it starts to become clear and lose that sort of glowing orange. But yeah, it's a really strange material because you can start to feel the glass solidify as you're working it. And so as, say, you're making a bubble, you have to keep it at a certain working temperature. And that just means that you have to reheat it in not the furnace, or it could be the furnace, but typically you'd use a different reheating chamber called the glory hole. And so you would reheat the glass in the glory hole as you're inflating the glass, shaping the glass. And so it's a very physical activity, getting up, blowing, heating. Every time you manipulate the glass, you only have, you know, say like 10 seconds or so before it starts to become rigid. And that depends on how thick you're working.
What are some of the other ways in which glass challenges? Let me see if I have this quote directly from you. You said, glass engages your curiosity and challenges your body and mind. What are some of the other ways that it engages your curiosity?
I think it has a lot of possibilities. The material is, I think, you know, every time I gather out of a furnace, it's sort of different. You don't get the same, you're not working with the same glass every time. And so sometimes you get a bubble, sometimes you get what's called a cord, where the glass is not maybe melted all the way. So you get a certain like texture to the glass, or like, you know, you work with a partner like 99% of the time in glass blowing. And so if the communication is off that day, maybe your partner will blow a little harder than what you intended, or, you know, nothing goes perfect every time you make a thing. And so I think sort of embracing the times that are unexpected, or maybe you make a mistake, those are the times when you can kind of reassess the material and reassess what's in front of you and try to find the good in it. And I really enjoy that aspect because it's a very responsive material. And so it's very much the way in which you work. It has to be very intuitive and it has to be very time sensitive, or else, you know, you don't have time to think when you're working with glass. And so it's this material that you have to have a relationship, and you have to understand what it wants to do. And you have to understand, you know, what is in front of you in order to really manipulate it in the way that the glass wants to be manipulated. It's sort of an abstract, I guess, way of working. It's A plus B doesn't always equal C, right? And so it's constantly engaging your mind and constantly thinking about what is happening in front of you that really makes me think of what I want to do next. And that's kind of how I work and how I envision the next object that I want to create. Typically it's, oh, you know, this shape is unexpected. What if I did it this way? And then it's a free association sort of way of making. You know, I draw out a lot of my objects that I want to create, but I always leave room for just inspiration that happens on the floor. And that's what I really like about glass.
on your website, it looks like you're restocking now. You're going to have all kinds of cool stuff by the time this gets posted. What are some of the things that our listeners might like to see on your website or maybe at the shows at which you'll be exhibiting?
Yeah, I am hoping to put up more cups on my website because those are really popular. They're my blobs and squiggles cups. And you can actually see some of the processes, me making them on my Instagram, which is Maria Made a Thing with underscore in between. But yeah, I love making them in all different colors. I think they're super fun. And so I'm hoping to restock a bunch of those. I've made a lot of butterbells, and those are really fun. I'm a huge fan of butter. So those are really great. And then kind of the butterbell being a container, I really love making lidded things. And so I'm hoping to have more of lidded containers. And also, you probably don't know this, Dot, but I started taking a ceramics class a few weeks ago, actually. And I'm very, very into it. And so hopefully by the time this podcast comes up, perhaps I'll have a few ceramic items up there as well. And maybe a combination of ceramics and glass objects. But we'll see. I'm very beginner at this point, but I'm hoping to have a lot of random objects up by
Christmas. Fun. That's fantastic. And this is going to be on mariainomoto.com?
Yes.
So people know where to look. Are you going to be exhibiting at shows or anything Christmas season 2022? Any place people can actually come meet you and see your work?
I don't have anything planned for December, but I am going to be part of ArtSpan's Open Studios, and that is happening October 22nd and 23rd. And so I think that's from 11 to 6 p.m. And I am going to be exhibiting I'm going to have a table with a few other artists at Public Glass. So Public Glass is the nonprofit glassblowing studio that I work out of. There are many professional glassblowers that rent out of that space. We hold classes, we do events and stuff like that. I'm part of one of the members there. And so, yeah, a number of us are going to be having a table. If you want to come visit, I'll be there. But
where do we find more information about these shows, the dates, the times? People will hear this, it'll go by quickly, but where can they actually see that online?
Well, if there's ever a show or something that I'm going to be part of, I typically post that on Instagram. So I'll post that usually in my stories. And so if you want to follow me there, that's probably the best place to get information, up-to-date information on what's happening in my life and my glassmaking. You can also go to my website and sign up for my newsletter, and then I will update you on different shows that I might be part of and just updates on whatever.
I'm curious. You say you're a beginner at ceramics. Taking a look at this glass, I was oohing and aahing. How long did it take you to get proficient as you are today to where, yes, I'm happy with what I'm making? Or was it something that just came to you immediately as a painter and your background in art?
I would say about year 5, I started to feel like, okay, I think if I think of something I want to make, I can make it. The learning curve for glassblowing is really steep. And so unless you're very diligent and you're willing to keep up with just glassmaking, you're not really going to get to a point where you're satisfied with what's in front of you. I mean, I'm still unsatisfied with a lot of things that I create. I don't think that'll ever go away, being an artist, but I would say about 5 years into glassblowing, I started to feel like, yeah, I think I have the hang of this. But you know, before then I made things that I was satisfied with, but I felt like it was really, really hard. I mean, between the first time I ever gathered glass out of a furnace to maybe 3 years into blowing glass, you know, there were a lot of burns, a lot of tears, a lot of broken glass. There's still a lot of broken glass, but far less now. It's really hard. Or at least I thought it was really hard.
That will be encouraging to anybody else who might like to take glass classes and follow the career path you have, because you are making this look like, oh, it's nothing. And I know perfectly well that you've got red hot molten glass here. You've got metal conductors. This has got to be something where you have some safety protocols in place and you have to be cautious.
Yeah. You really have to know what's happening in front of you to not get burned. I mean, I haven't burned myself in a long time. I mean, a bad burn in a long time. But when I first started, you know, you don't know where to touch. You don't know what's safe. You don't know like what's hot, what's not hot. You know, the equipment might look cold, but maybe it's hot. You know, those are a lot of things that you just learn along the way. And yeah, when I was in school, I had a lot of great instructors. My glass blowing teacher, she was really great. And my, you know, my colleagues, they were the people that were blowing next to me on the bench. They were all really great. So I learned a lot from watching other people. And so it's a very community-oriented environment, blowing glasses. You know, your skills are always up for display. People are always watching. People come up to your bench and see what you're doing. And, you know, you always have a friend there that's helping you blow glass. And so it's very great. You know, there are environments where maybe the workplace is more toxic in the glass world, but I have fortunately not had that experience. I'm very lucky. I'm very lucky that I had very great instructors, people that have helped me throughout the years, and had great friends that were really great glass blowers encouraging me.
A supportive community makes all the difference, whether you're talking glass blowing or it can be anything, rocket science, anything of that nature.
Yeah.
I've wondered what an average day in the studio is like for you, or if there even is such a thing as an average day.
For me, there is really no average day because I run a small business. It's between, you know, making the glass, scheduling who's going to help me, cold working, which is after you take the glass out of the kiln. When it's cold, you can grind the glass and manipulate it that way. And then, you know, packing and shipping, that takes a while usually. And so it's really, I kind of fill my time and schedule things as appropriate, but there's really no average day. But when I'm in the studio blowing glass, I have 3 hours at a time. So every studio is different, but the studio that I work out of, you have to sign up for 3 hour blow slots. And so during that 3 hour blow slot, I have to make sure that every minute counts. And so I do a lot of prep for just increasing efficiency in the studio, because it's a very expensive craft and the risk is very high. And so unless you're prepared, you're really not going to get a lot out of it. And so, you know, you also don't want to waste your assistant's time. And so just kind of making sure that everything runs smoothly, that's a pretty big part of what I do. I typically will write out, okay, this is going to take 20 minutes, this is going to take 5 minutes, and then write out a list and try to get through as much as I can. And having all of the colors that I use, there's a lot of planning that goes into there and communicating with my partner. Okay, use this color, not that color, or this and that. it gets a little tricky sometimes, because when you use color, you have to, and this is one way to do it, but you would heat color up in a kiln. A color comes in a bar form. And so, you know, it would be like a 1-inch bar that's maybe a foot long that you would cut into chunks. And then you would place that into a kiln. And then you would pick that up on a solid rod, shape it, and then you would apply it to your bubble that's clear. And that's called an overlay. So the furnace is clear glass. And so whatever color you want to add to it, you have to heat it yourself and apply it. And when the color is heated, it changes color. And so red looks brown, blue looks green. And so being able to communicate with your partner about what's happening in the kiln is really important, because you don't want to end up with a color that you didn't intend to make. So, yeah, communication is a lot of what I do.
I didn't know until we had this conversation that glass blowing was not a solitary pursuit, because every glass blower I've ever seen, they just show up and there they are. But no, what when you typically work with a partner, let's say that you've come in, you've done all the planning that you just told me that you do. Now you're going to make something and your partner is there. What's an example of how you might work with your partner? What might you do and what might they do to get the finished piece?
So my partner would grab the color out of the kiln for me, because like I said earlier, the glass needs to be held at a certain temperature, working temperature. And so that means one person has to make sure or babysit the glass to keep it at a certain rigidity while another person will prep. And so typically if I'm doing a color application, then I will have the bubble and I would reheat the glass, make sure it doesn't get too cold and make sure it doesn't get too hot while my partner gets the color ready for me, which means they pick up the color, they shape it in the way that I want it, so that it'll be ready for the application part. And then after that, my partner will, you know, help me with blowing the glass, because I will be at the bench kind of turning the pipe and watching what's happening with the glass while I communicate with my partner, blow hard, blow softer, you know, stop blowing. And then if it's a really big piece, my partner will take reheats for me, because it gets really tiring to lift all the glass. And also the glory hole, which is the reheating chamber, has doors. And so if you're making something really small, then maybe the doors, the opening's that big. But then if you're making a larger bowl or whatever, the opening has to be bigger, which means the doors have to open up. That means you have 2000 degree heat coming out of the glory hole that you're blasted with, right? And so the bigger the piece, the harder it is to turn, the more reliant you are on your partner to help you, because you can't turn while you have the doors opening and closing. You can't, there's so many things in the process that you're just reliant on your partner to help you to make everything successful. The other part in the process that the assistant's really critical for is when you do the transfer. And so usually what you would do is, if you're making a cup, actually I have a cup right here that I made the other day. I can actually show you. I don't know if you can see. There's a little mark right there. That's called a punty mark. And so actually I have some examples. These are, I once took my husband glass blowing into the studio and he made his first bubble and we saved it. So this is a glass bubble We just took it off the pipe here. But you can imagine the pipe would be over here and you would inflate the bubble, right? And then you would flatten this end and this becomes the bottom of a cup, say. And so this mark down here, that's called a punty mark. And that's from what's called the punty. So the punty is just a solid rod with shaped glass on the end of it that you actually attach to the bottom of your vessel so that you can break off the opening from the pipe. And then you would flip it around and then open from this hole. That becomes the lip. And so, you know, a lot of glass is made in that manner. You make the shape on one end on the pipe and you flip it around and open the lip. And so if you ever go to a store and you see a little punty mark on the bottom of a vessel, you know that it's handmade. A lot of the glass that I make, I typically will torch that out, but sometimes I don't, or maybe I do a light torch, but your assistant will bring the punty to you because, like I said, as the artist, you have to be in charge of making sure the glass is at a certain temperature. You have to babysit the glass and you can't really effectively bring yourself a punty as well as if your partner brings it for you. You can, for small things, you can manage, but with larger objects, you just really can't get away from that. I don't know if that makes sense, but I've been doing glass for so long that it's hard for me to sort of explain all of these processes to people that don't understand glass. And so if you have any further questions, like, please let me know if you want me to clarify anything. But yeah, bringing the punty is a great help. I always rely on my partner for that.
You've explained it, I feel, very well from someone who does not really do glass blowing. You've taught me about 6 different things about glass blowing.
Oh, good.
I'm curious. I looked at your others gallery, and one of the pieces you made is a bank with the words future self. If I were to speak to future Maria, 2027, where would you like to be with glass blowing and your other art? What would you like to have accomplished?
So many things. One day I would really love to have my own glass blowing studio and be able to make my own glass and have the freedom of just, I want all of the challenges and all the good that comes from having my own space. There's really nothing wrong with sharing equipment and things like that, but I think, you know, being able to customize like all of the things that you're working with, I think that's very special. And creating a collaborative space with all of my friends to come in and work. And I would really love to be an inspiration to a lot of other girls out there, because in terms of the glass world, there aren't that many women that pursue glass blowing for whatever reason. You know, it's just we're just very underrepresented. And so I think having a space that is run by a female glass blower, I think would be great for just people to see. And I would really love that. And yeah, and again, just continuing on with creating space that's very positive and non-toxic, because I've been blessed with being able to work in really great environments. And I know that there are places out there that are not, yeah, just not great places to work in glass. And I would love to just be a part of continuing on positive glass blowing spaces, creating that space. So hopefully future Maria will have her own glass blowing studio.
I'm going to check back in with you, you know, and find out more about that as you have your own studio.
We'll see. That is the hope.
Maria, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Dot.
You and I have been listening to glass artist Maria Inamoto. Follow Maria on her Instagram, Maria Made a Thing with underscores, to see what she's been creating lately. Also, get a look at her website, mariainamoto.com. Her last name is spelled E-N-O-M-O-T-O. On her website, you'll find what she currently has for sale. That is once again mariainamoto.com. You can also sign up for her newsletter. And while Maria says her plans have changed since we recorded this interview, and she will not be exhibiting at Public Glass's open studio on Saturday, October 22nd, some of her work will be available in the gallery. And she encourages you to come on down because there are going to be 7 exhibiting artists there, highly talented people who create things at Public Glass, and they're going to be doing demonstrations in addition to exhibiting their work. Maria has also emailed that adjacent Yosemite Studios are also going to be having an open studio event, and you're invited. You may just want to plan on making a day of this. This is going to be fantastic. And that concludes this edition of Noelophile. Thank you for listening, and may your Christmas season be sparkling, swirling with color, and crafted with love and imagination.